This is On The Record. I'm Bharati Jagdish. K.F. Sito is a food consultant, photographer, writer and TV host who's best known for creating the popular hawker food guide Makan Sutra. He also promotes food culture through specialized events such as the World Street Food Congress that have made him internationally known. The New York Times hailed him as a food guide maven, and CNN called him the guru of grub. Over the years, he has sought to showcase hawkers who are often underrated through several TV programs such as Makan Sutra Raw and The Food Surprise that have made him a household name in Singapore and other parts of Asia as well. He's also the owner and operator of Makan Sutra Glutton's Bay, which offers Singapore's favorite street food under one roof. As more and more of our pioneer hawkers retire or pass on without passing on their skills, Mr. Sito is growing increasingly worried about Singapore's culinary heritage. In the wake of the death of a prominent char kway teow seller, K.F. Sito went on the record with me about keeping our heritage alive. But first, why he's made it his life's mission.
I started out as a professional in the media, actually. You know, I spent time as a writer and photojournalist, and then I realized that my love for food, and every Singaporean will tell you that my love for food, I could marry that up with storytelling. So I started a food guide, among the very first Singapore hawker food guide.
Makan Sutra.
In the 90s, Makan Sutra. And I had no idea what was in store. I just realized I must capture all these before it just fades. People had disdain for hawker food in the 80s, 90s growing up, but it's something we love.
Why did they have disdain for it? What makes you say that?
Well, hawker food was something from the streets. And in industrializing, developing, potential first world Singapore, a lot of older generation love hawker food, but they don't want to be associated with hawkers. I love your char kway teow, but stay away from me. You know, they will just like, oh, hawker food is seen as a profession of folks who cannot get on in life. You know, ex-cons or people who are jobless, or drug addicts and all that. To a large extent, it's quite true.
It was in those days.
You know, the gangster stories, how hawkers were fighting with the authorities as they were clearing up the street in all this gangland. You know, all that stories surface. You could talk to those people who are still around, you know, when they were trying to rid street hawkers back in the day. So the disdain was there. But to me, it's culture. It's through food that I learned so much more about ourselves that, wow, Fing, what kind of a Eurasian dish is that? I wanted to eat it just to know what flavors, the color of the flavors behind the culture. And then you learn so much more about Peranakan food, it's the beyond laksa Peranakan food, the Indian Chinese, the different types of Indian, different types of Chinese, different type of Malays, and different type of food, and our foreign influences. I got to know so much about my land, my culture, my backstory. And then I realized, hey, this is a big potential. The business mind came about. Mm. It's an untapped potential. So I started a food guide. And what would eventually come along, we winged it as we went along. TV shows came about, food guides we did unsuccessfully, online stuff. Because, you know, too early, back in the day, too early to tell what online would be. You know, nobody imagined what social media
Today
is a different
easy
story. You know, we are reinventing. So eventually, after so many years of telling people what to eat, where to eat, why to eat, how to eat, I realized 7-8 years ago there was another problem, that of continuity. Will a future generation, will your children be able to enjoy, say, nasi jaganan, you know, wonderful flavors that so deeply represents. We're not talking about the surface dishes, your chicken rice, laksa, nasi lemak. We're going further in. Dishes that your grandparents or your great-grandparents perhaps may have introduced to this land and gifted this land with this culinary culture, they may be gone.
We'll talk more about that in a moment. Yeah. So, but I'd also like to know, you know, you talked about how in those days, in the 80s, was it, where there was a lot of disdain for that type of culture. Why is it that you didn't see it the way many others did, with that sense of disdain? What do you think it was?
Because I'm not perfect also. I'm like one of them, you know. And I don't see, I mean, I believe in what people do, not what they did. And if somebody can put that perfect platter of pleasure for the masses, something has to be right about that person. Now, you know, everybody tells you, yeah, don't judge people for what they did before, you know. People still do judge, of course.
Yes.
But as if nobody's perfect. Even the guy, the accuser himself, will never be perfect. But look, these people, these hawkers, ex-cons as they may be, are holding on to a great, one of the greatest cultures we still have left. You know about the delicious of, say, chicken rice, but then you go further and you realize, wow, look, you call it Hainan chicken rice, but you can't find it in Hainan. Mm. It's only in Singapore. And then you hear a story about how this migrant generation came and created because they had to survive. That's why they created this. Not because of creativity, you know, because of desperation. And ingenuity made this food culture of ours. Hainan chicken rice didn't originally come from Singapore, although you find it back in Hainan.
But it's in a different
today,
form.
It's re-exported back to Hainan. The Hainanese that came here, there was a story about this Mr. Wang, I think. He sold chicken rice on a shoulder cart. He walked up and down the streets around Raffles Hotel area. That was known as the Hainan Ghetto back in the day. And then, look, I mean, back in Hainan, yeah, people served chopped chicken. Everybody served poached chicken with rice and a ginger dip. But this guy took the chicken stock that was used to poach a chicken, cooked the rice with, added spices and intensified the flavour, and then he cooked the chicken, and then the fact that he had to carry the chicken up and down the street, the guy had to think, you know, if I carry the hot chicken up and down, the thing will wilt, no? So the guy kept it cold, he chilled it, or he iced it, and it could hold longer. So on the streets, he took room temperature or slightly cold chicken, served it with hot rice, and he created a chili sauce, which is non-existent in Hainan. And he blended it with vinegar, a locally invented tangy chili sauce, and he created ginger with it, and this black soy sauce, caramelized soy sauce, which you don't find in China. He inspired the Suiki, the very, very, the mother of all chicken rice, the defunct Suiki chicken rice. And older generation will go, wow. I call it culture. Nobody saw that as a, you know, oh, your dish, my dish. Mm. It's a Singapore dish.
As I was looking through your biography, we noticed that your path in life wasn't quite straight and narrow either. You went to good schools and then you ended up in vocational training, a vocational institute. How did all of that shape your sensibilities?
I guess from day one, I had been, you know, I don't follow the rules. I don't go, you know, the straight and narrow, as you call it. I always take the other fork on the road. I had never been normal. You know, I studied, yeah, I said a good school. I was supposed to go to college, university and all that. And I struggled with studies. And I said, no, I'm talented. There must be something right about me. Because I know it's wrong. It's not me to be doing the corporate line. So I took vocational training. I started.
Why did you struggle with studies, you think? Was there just no interest?
You know, learning what 1 + 1 = I don't feel does it for me, you know.
Mm.
Even as a kid, I said, oh, I wanted to be a pilot. Then growing up, I realized, hey, everybody flies on autopilot. You go up and you land. So I guess I really wanted to do something different. And I think everybody says that you do something different. But to really follow that interest, that little voice in your head, this just doesn't feel right. I went into graphics, advertising, art, photography, all creative stuff. And then, you know, I could exercise this freedom, you know.
Was there a stigma, though, attached to going to a vocational school at that time?
Yeah, it's a VITB, you know. Mm. It's like, wow, from this school you go there. But I had very good years. I played football there. You know, I had colleagues who were like-minded, a bit off. But today, they're one of the most successful creative minds in the world, not in Singapore.
How did you deal with the stigma, though?
I didn't see it as stigma. I did well in all my jobs, and when I came out, I was, right after army, I was immediately offered a job. I rejected that job. It was my first job, I think it was Science Centre, who gave me a graphic designer's person, because the major Morning Daily called me up and said, hey, we want you as a... I was a photojournalist and photographer, and I had beautiful years down there. That shaped my thinking. Those years exposed to, like, every day we were out there seeing, touching, hearing, photographing things, meeting so many things. It shaped my thinking. So, and I said, in life, whatever you do, there are no rules. There are no rules. More so than today. I would say a lot of education today is irrelevant. What you're learning today may possibly not be relevant tomorrow because of internet, because of technology, because of what's available on the information. So be very careful. So as you tread, as you go along, careful what you're up against. You're up against yourself, you're up against technology.
So what should the education system offer then, considering all the things you've just said?
I think people are always saying, make yourself relevant. Even ministers are all saying, but when you distill it down to the ground, these people are still learning 1+1, you know, I was talking to some folks who studied communications. They said, communications is about social media. I say, that's so passé. You know? It's not about social media. It's how you use social media, what you put up, how you put up that one little clickbait. How do you draw people? How do you own people with your page? They already said no rote learning, you know, even the ministry is saying. But you really have to implement it, and implementation is the hardest. You know, I think students, you've got to let them out into the real world. You've got to release these fishes from your cozy little cages and let them touch, see the real world, let them formulate, let them get an idea of what the real tomorrow is going to be. Don't teach them how to change, let them decide how they want to change.
Here's the thing though, you said that you were exposed to a lot of things in your early career. I'm still wondering why you chose this as the focus of it, food.
Yeah, the shallow reason is I love food. But
what's the
over
reason?
The years, as I winged it, I had no idea what this would entail for me. That I would eventually wind up doing food courts, books, TV shows. The World Street Food Congress is another story. Mm. And wind up doing, you know, asking to do consultancy work for Bourdain and all that. Why do you want to do it? One fine day, I just sat down and looked at a plate of char kway teow. And I said, I realized it's a portal. It's not just a dish. That plate of char kway teow, because of who we are, is a portal into a world of education, culture, trade, tourism, opportunities, entrepreneurial opportunities, all in one plate. If you master that dish, you can be a entrepreneur. Char kway teow chains, fried noodle chains, that's business. That char kway teow dish, through culture, I learned about the Teochews. I learned about how they created dish. I learned about the Silk Road of this fried char kway teow that has versions in Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia and Singapore, how it travelled down. That I learned. In the world of tourism, hey, tell your friends, hey, come Singapore, man, hey, I take you to eat char kway teow. You know, that's opportunities in the world of tourism.
Speaking of char kway teow, recently, the original hawker that started Hill Street Char Kway Teow passed away. His son, of course, has taken over the business and has been doing it for some time now. But you posted about this on your social media, and you lamented the death of the hawker, but you also celebrated the fact that someone else had taken over the business, learnt the ropes and done what was needed to keep this going. Why do you feel so strongly about this?
You know how many commoners that plate of char kway teow Mr. Ng has pleased over the decades? You know, people just go there without thinking, eat it and felt comforted with the thing. It's an unspoken culture in our food. Yes, it's good that his son who had taken over. When I was sharing with you, Akiet, his son, initially was quite reluctant to take over.
Yeah,
but then over the years, he got to know, because, you know, people started writing and I was telling him, hey, you have to continue this. Your father is old and he's getting sick. And then people came, started getting feedback, started getting recognition. We invited them to London to do the Singapore Day and did events. And he felt, hey, it is not just some job by some ex-con or jobless people. I am recognized. So I think the recognition is very important. Why do I feel strongly for it also that, yeah, we're all talking about new hawkers, you know, blah. But hey, we are only talking about that dozen or two young hawkers that keeps surfacing, you know. you know, we got 10 over 20,000 hawkers in our midst, and we are only celebrating that dozen or two young hawkers.
The newer ones who are entering the scene now, you're saying?
Yeah, some of them want to enter because, yeah, I think I can get fame, because my father is so famous already. I think maybe Gordon Ramsay will come and eat at my store, man. I'll be famous, man. Mm. When it didn't happen, they quit within 3 months. I've seen them.
Really?
Yeah, they tell me, I'm the son of so-and-so, I'm taking over, blah, blah, blah. And I know you're a champion. You know, can you tell yourself and all your blogger and writer friends and influencer friends to come? I want to share with you my story. And when he's not spun into, you know, the
God.
sparkling limelight, they give up. I've seen it happen.
How many times have you seen this happen?
I'm quite... More than I would like. But and some who are really... I don't care. It's not about success. This is what I want to do. I ditched my degree. I ditched my previous job to do this.
And these are people who are taking over from their parents.
Some just wanted to do it.
What do you see more often? The former types of cases or the latter
the
types of cases? The former
ones
types.
Who wants fame, glory, and 1 million likes.
And once they don't have it, it's over for them.
They're back to being a, I don't know what, Grab driver or Uber driver.
But you see, that's the thing. It's a hard job. Not just anyone can do it, clearly. At least now there's more respect.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Way more respect. You know, when I took the New York Times editor way back when, in the 90s, for a food spin, the guy did this glorious article, and then boom, it went all the way up. And people were talking way, I'm talking about way, way up there. And then suddenly, the Singapore Tourism Board had a food department, had a food division. Because, hey, wow, this is a potential we never fully tapped. A food tour, coming to Singapore for the food. Long ago, it was like, hey, you know, let's not promote hawker food. Let's promote our fancy new Asian food dishes. Mm. And then they realized, hey, hello, people can come and eat at your $3, $4 chicken rice and stay at the Ritz-Carlton, you know. They need not be staying at backpacker hotels. So that was a lure, a culture, a potential. Every other article about culture mentions food.
But
enough is done.
You say not enough is done to keep it going, to keep the Singapore food culture going. But we have heard so much recently in terms of hawker incubation programs, hawkerpreneur programs. The hawker incubation program is actually led by the National Environment Agency. It's an NEA-led program. So clearly the government is behind this as well.
I think the government should stay out of this.
Why?
They're not fit. They're not qualified.
Tell me why you say that.
Because they're only throwing money at you. You know it, you mentioned it, that hawker work is tough. So to encourage it, oh, here's incubation, here's all that. But it's still tough. Just because the government wants to incubate you doesn't mean this job is easy. Doesn't mean that you bid for a $5, $10 stall at some hawker centres and you got it set, you know. People gave up that $1 hawker stall, the guy gave it up. Why? Because it's difficult to be there every day, to know what you do, how you're going to do it, how you're going to reach out to the people in the midst of 20 over 1,000 hawker stalls in Singapore. How are you going to reach out to them? Where are you going to get supplies from? Who's going to teach you in that 10 by 10 space to scale? Say you're successful and how are you going to cook 100 portions in an hour? Who's going to teach you that?
So our older hawkers know how to do this.
They learn it through rote. They learn it through experience. And older hawkers are not really sharing. They'll share a recipe with you. For example, sure, you can go and get an online recipe or ask your hawker father or your friend's father to teach you how to do char kway teow. Oh, you put this, you put that. But a lot of things, you know, the equipment, how you trap heat, what kind of fire do you use, what kind of wok do you use, how do you lay out your sauces, how do you offer 100 portions during lunch? Not taught. YouTube doesn't tell you that.
But aren't there also hawkerpreneur and apprenticeship programs that actually involve some old school hawkers?
I think they had a hawkerpreneur program where the government actually paid hawkers to teach interested new generation, paid the hawkers, and then also paid them for some internship for a while, and then they went to open stalls on their own, and they got discounted stalls, you know, incubation prices for a few months. If I'm not mistaken, all of them are closed. All of them are gone.
What do you think happened there? What went wrong?
Nobody taught them, hey, it's bloody tough, you know. Nobody really told them, it's not easy. And I understand, I mean, this is through my own observations and little investigations. Not the full recipes are taught. For example, I know this noodle stall who very famous and incubated. They taught some students to open noodle stall. So eventually, the student went to open a noodle stall, got it at a very special price in a prime location, and it closed. Mm. So, you know, when we did the story, and then, you know, off record, it was telling me that the guy, the hawker didn't really teach them. He says, I'll teach you how to do this, but I will not tell you how the sauce is made. Mm. I will sell you the sauce.
But isn't that fair, though, if the hawker says, you know, I worked hard to formulate this recipe, why should I give it away for free?
The hawker was paid.
How much, though? How much was he paid versus how much he thinks the recipe is worth? So that disparity is problematic.
If the hawker is not willing to teach foodie, then don't teach. Or tell them to say, I will tell you what a good sauce is. If the art of teaching is, I'll tell you, you can have, I will buy 10 noodles and you see the different sauces. And I tell you the stuff that goes into it. You are tasting this, you are tasting that. I have my own secret. I'm not willing to share it with you, but I will share with you what is the thinking behind a sauce like this. What are the taste notes? Then that would inspire the filler to come up perhaps with an even better sauce.
But isn't that a question of initiative rather than the hawker teacher's responsibility?
That's why I say the government should stay out of this. Let the people, just give people very good rental prices and tell them where to get your supplies and let them figure out on their own how to be good, how to be better.
But you see, the government being involved, why do you think it is posing an obstacle? The pumping in of money does help to some extent, some people might say. Yeah. But everything else, perhaps, is a question of initiative.
Pumping money...
Is it doing damage?
In pumping money into the industry to fire this up may not be helpful. It gives people the impression that it's so easy, you know. Mm. Let's go and do a try thing. You know? Mm. You know, like they say in the movies, there's no try, you know. And then after that, it's easy to walk out when you are funded by somebody else's money. Yeah, but if it's your own and you realize that, wow, this is good, man. This is what I really want to do. It's a different story.
But you see,
but if it's your own money, you will try harder.
If the government stopped doing this, wouldn't we be even worse off? Even the people who are trying now will not try at all. I mean, that was the reason they got involved, right? That was the reason the authorities got involved.
It's the same story as in the past, as why people went into the hawker business back in the day, 50s, 60s, 40s. They were desperate. Today, I think there's more reason for you to be desperate again. A lot of jobs are going to the machines, the computers and AI. So maybe food is something AI cannot fully take over because people are spoiled with the pleasure of artisanal food. You know, we don't stand in front of a machine to feed ourselves. We want somebody to cook for us. So it's a very noble profession today. Not that people don't see it with disdain. It's a different story. So to get into the business, if you can think about it, wow, hey, maybe, you know, I like to dredge this food that I believe in, love, and I know that I've got a story to tell about this food, and I want to sell and tell, and I want to go out and do it because it makes me happy, because I know I can generate some money from this.
But yeah. Let's say people don't naturally think of it this way. What's the alternative then?
To those who are really keen to go into the business, I tell you what, this is what you do. Go and work for a hawker. Go and work for those zicha restaurants or, you know, go there. Because these hawkers are looking for manpower themselves. Go there, sit there, you know, work. Half a year, 1 year, the hawker may or may not teach you everything. But if you have more than half a brain, you'll be able to figure out the entire story and come out and go one up on the hawker. Because ultimately, it's still a very tough job. Now, if you just take some funding and go with some government instituted programs and all that, you will still wind up with not much. To a newer generation who is really interested, get out there, intern, learn, sit in a hawker stall, stand in a hawker stall, work, learn the craft, and then come out because you want to do this.
But that is the problem, right? Isn't that the root of the problem, that people don't want to work so hard and toil in this kind of environment?
I think the game may be changing. There are a lot of programs, a lot of shows, a lot of gigs that, the young... I think a newer generation want to get into it because there's fame involved. I could be the number one trending hawker stall, international food shows.
But as you yourself said, they give up very easily if they don't make it within the first few months. Yep. So
let's attract the real ones. Let this culture just ride naturally. I mean, you're not going to... Let me rewind back to the problem which I also can't find an answer to. That after the 1986, the last hawker centre that was built in 1986, until maybe around the year 2000, there was dead silence, you know. Everybody hopped out of the hawker business. They wanted to go into all other businesses. So it was just dead silence. So this, that black years, that black food culture years is affecting now, because that continuity stopped. So now to get back into the business, I think it's got to be this, the reality of hardship. You're educating the wrong stuff. So many people want to think, hey, you know, I want to, you know, a lot of people are talking about going back to their grandmother's recipes and stories. I say, go for it. Don't let anything stop you. If you have any issues, come to me. I'll tell you stories, who you can meet, who you can talk to, and get into it, because you love the food culture that you grew up with. Get into it. Don't let anything stop you. It's very sexy. I've just came back from New York, and one of the biggest food markets, street food players down there, who has hawker stalls, pop-up hawkers. He's the only vendor in the entire United States who's given permission to set up hawker pop-up stalls in the heart of Times Square. Well, how many, 20, 30 million people traverse that area? And the guy was saying, I would love to have some Singapore hawkers. When I told him about what we do, the food culture and the stories, is I would love to have some Singapore hawkers. And he sent me an email. Those are the potentials. Imagine you are selling chicken rice balls in Times Square or something, or nasi lemak packs, you know, and people talk about you. And those are very, very worthwhile goals. I'm not just selling food, you know, I'm selling culture, and I'm in it for the business too. Government funding, fail. Private initiative, fail. This too, I'd rather pick the lesser of the two evils and focus the lesser, I won't say the two evils. I'd rather encourage you to come up on your own, because they'll be more organic and you will be in it because you did not get funding. It's your own money, it's your own belief. The more successful newer generation hawkers are those that came out on their own, and they're still around despite the failures. They didn't fall the minute they came across the first wall. So here's the thing, I mean, there's so many encouragement, incubation programs, so many media, so many, you know, stars, street food stars and all that, and it's still not happening. I would just say, if it doesn't happen, then let this food culture die. Then let the soil rot and let new shoots come up. Burn the whole forest down. I believe in that. Right now it looks bleak, but I still believe down the road there will be some kind of a subculture coming up. Somebody will realize, hey, it's not just about running a food stall. I can expand. I can be very comfortable. I can be very happy being that one dish entrepreneur. It is about knowing how satisfying being a one-dish hawker or a street food entrepreneur can be.
How do you feel about some of these new generation hawkers? A lot of them are not serving up traditional hawker fare as we know it. They have their own innovative cuisine. Some of them fuse the two, so you know they have new Singapore cuisine coming up. How do you feel about that?
Chicken rice is a fusion dish, if you look at it. Somebody just came up with it. So a lot of what we eat in Singapore were created. It's kind of like a fusion. There's like a bak kut teh or rojak. Even your fried Hokkien noodles doesn't exist. It's only in Singapore. Even bak chor mee was something created here. So if you look at it 50 years ago, your great-great-grandfather would say, what nonsense is this, you know? But it's iconic today. So if you are creating a dish, expressing or creating a new hawker dish based on who you are and where you came from, you're expressing yourself. You know, authentic is an expression of who you are. So if you're just plucking things from the sky and putting it on a plate, you may have a use-by date. But if it's a progression and it's expression of who you are, where you came from, the flavors that you love, your family traditions, that has staying power, because it's proven over time that this is evolvement of food culture is very well respected. People like it.
So you're not a purist, you know, like it has involvement, to be old style char kway teow, old style Hokkien mee, old style.
It starts from there. Oh, it starts from there. When you start putting giant prawns or lobsters and all that, I wouldn't fault you. You know, because you're still expressing who you are. And if you are, you're using fancier produce, you're plating it nicely, serving in a nicer environment, I won't fault you because you're still expressing who you are. You're delivering it in a different vehicle.
You talk about an evolution. How do you feel about the environment? I mean, some of the newer hawker centres that have come up look quite different from what we're used to, you know, in neighbourhoods.
Yeah, I see a lot of hipster food markets, even the government food courts and all that. I'm counting the days.
Why do you say that?
Sell food. Hipster food is not food.
See, but you just said that you can be adventurous with the food.
Evolve, not hipster. Don't just put things between two, I know, waffles and you know, try to sell what's trending on the internet. Look, I mean, if you took the old-fashioned Caesar cut Hainanese curry rice, you know, which is just some hawker stall, point, put it over rice, slather over curry. But if somebody said, no, I'm gonna redesign the whole experience, the type of food, how it's delivered, how I lay out my stall, the big plates, and how some Japanese curry restaurants are doing, and I lay them out, and I do sets, and I tell you stories, wow, and I introduce nicer, you know, korobuta stuff, or wagyu this and that. Wow, I'll clap for you, man. You are standing out loud and proud and say, this is my food culture. But if you're reinventing it, I don't know what, putting curry in a, I don't know what, waffle cone or something like this, you know. Too fancy, too... I would go there because I want to Instagram that and tell my friends about it. But if you're doing it, you're selling something that people, oh, this is nice, I will go back again. Not because it's new, because it's nice. I go by reality. I know a lot of these younger hawkers are doing newfangled stuff. They are falling.
Why are they falling?
There is love, but no sustenance in their love for this kind of newfangled food. A case in point is, you look at your Hari Raya malls at Geylang Serai, it's not really a Muslim, you know, Ramadan bazaar anymore. It's a place where hipster people go and try out new stuff, sell anything, just don't sell pork. Mm. You know, rolled ice cream and all that. People are rolling their eyes. What is this? So I think a lot of the traditionalists are going to the other ones in Woodlands and Tampines. I just want to bring Kuih Jonggong back to my home and eat it. And put Gula Melaka ice cream on it and enjoy it. But I don't know what kind of nonsense. It's like raclette cheese and all that. They're just using it as an opportunity to do hipster food, to test the market. Beyond that, they don't sell it. You don't find them opening stalls anywhere. If it's all that good, these people will be selling stalls because they're just trendy.
But these are the traditionalists you're talking to who will say, what's the point of all this? I've also heard some younger diners saying this is exactly what they want. They want Instagrammable food. They want something trendy. Yeah. It's just up to the food seller to constantly reinvent him or herself in order to stay in business. Yes. But they don't care about the traditionalists.
Let them live another 10, 20 more years and see what they like. What for? So if they want trendy food, here's the thing. Singapore food culture, if you want trendy, I'll tell these young people, hey, go Thailand, go Korea, go to the other countries. They got a lot more trendy food than us. But if you want food that's you, that you can own, that when people say, well, this, I left Singapore with the ultimate gastronomic souvenir. I had chili crabs and I dunked it in, say, waffles or mantou and all that. I can bring that experience back. If they came to eat waffles with curry ice cream, and I said, yeah, I get that in Chutney Chok in Delhi or so. I don't remember you. I remember it now. Tomorrow when I wake up, I forgot what I ate.
So true heritage cuisine.
There will always be, young people being who they are, there will always be a need for something new, you know. But ultimately, when they go back, they find identity in food. They find deliciousness and identity in food. Because if you're starting trendy, look at all these trendy stores, they're not surviving. What I do now, I'm trying to protect Singapore food culture overseas. I just came back from some trips in Philippines. I've got two kids who came to our World Seafood Congress a few years back, so inspired, and they opened up this very fancy hipster a container hawker center, 3 floors, 30 stalls, and it was party, live music, burgers, steaks, and fancy fries, and everywhere. 6 months later, the guy called me up. He says, could you come and give us some suggestions and all that? So I went and I saw the place, and I straight away, I told him, show me no more, I know your problems. Hipster, friendly, nice, you targeted the millennials who are not loyal. After they post, their friend knows they went there, they are not coming back. So 2 months, 3 months after, they were struggling. So I said, you got to sell food, you cannot sell hip. Now, millennials are people. I mean, how many millennials eat hipster food on a regular daily basis?
No. So ultimately, you have to remember, they're people too.
They are people. Millennials are people who love heritage food. But if you think, oh, millennials want fancy food, they'll come once, twice, been there, done that, they're out of there. When all these new, young hawkers, they are famous because they sold heritage food that the majority of the world and the country loves. When a foreigner comes, I mean, if you are doing hipster food because you want likes, you want a little mention here and there, it's okay. But if you are doing it for the long term, you want to do business, here's the thing, the majority of Singapore still goes back to traditional food. And then when the tourists come, would you take them to eat waffles and fried chicken? We have 15 million tourists. And yes. What would they want to eat when they come here?
Traditional Singapore
food. Samgyetang? No, man. No, they want to eat char kway teow, stuff they can't pronounce. And they want to go home a bit. So tap on that 15 million visitors who's not going to eat your fancy food because they got better stuff back home. If you believe in making more than a couple of dollars. If you're always about new food, the Singapore food culture will die within 10 years and there will be a new reinvention of old food.
What about the environment?
Hawker centres should be just comfortable, not fancy or hipster. You know, ventilated well, or even, hey, I think last time we were talking about cooling to some kind of aircon technology, certain corners, or just more comfortable. Don't start putting car tires and half-cut Cadillacs.
Yeah. Some of the spaces really do look like that.
You take away from the fact that you are selling food. Just make it comfortable. Yeah, that's all people want.
There's also a lot of talk about community activities. What do you think of all that?
That's irritating. You know, eat, please shut up. Oh, can I give you $5 and you shut up? Because we weren't brought up to have community things in a hawker center. Otherwise, your parents would have distilled it to you.
Mm.
You know, all this. You know, just keep it food because it shows desperation. When you're trying to put concerts and talks and all that kind of bonsai growing thing in a hawker centre to attract people, that shows how desperate you are. So you've got to go and revisit the plan to attract people to a hawker centre. Go be a hawker because we want to continue this legacy, which is not sexy to a new generation. But if they knew that, where are the opportunities? Can I become the world's best, the next world's best one dish entrepreneur? Like McDonald's. One dish. Burgers, look what they are. Or the fried chicken KFC, one dish. Jollibee, one dish. If they could be exposed to the potentials of what that one dish, one hawker stall concept potentials can be worldwide, and the game changes, you know. You know, I conducted a course called the Makan Sutra Street Food Pro 360. I had the intention of doing it permanent. And of course, I went for funding. But I felt, I tell you what, in that short 30-hour brief, I had to tell you what you need to learn beyond the recipe. I brought in bloggers and writers to tell you what they are looking for. I brought in designers. I brought in entrepreneurs to tell you what they did with their coffee shop, what they did with their little dish, where they went. And besides the recipes, I believe you can get it right. You can go and Google. If you have half a brain, you can come up with a perfect recipe. Beyond that, how to design a stall, how to sell a stall, how to promote, how to scale, how to trend, all this are very, very important. Who do you look for when you go overseas? Who do you look for? Where do you get funds to go and expand yourself? Not fully taught. So I'm happy to tell you, out of the 20 people that came to this 30-hour course that we did, 18 are still in the business. 30 hours. And I feel, hey, we should do this. I had hoped that maybe through that course that I got some funding to do, I could spin, get some organization to spin and do, and hope I could play some part in that. But it's still zero.
Mm. You know, why can't you just finance this on your own, do more of this as an advocate of heritage cuisine?
Because I'm already doing more? Yeah, because I'm already doing like 6,000 things. Mm. I can't do it alone. I'm no longer 45. But I hope, you know, some organization, a group, or even maybe some government or sub-government company or organization will come along and say, let's do this.
You just said government shouldn't be involved, though.
Shouldn't be involved. I hope, but through this, because I feel it's the right thing to do, you want to spend it, that's the way you should spend your money in doing an academy. I've always, you can check, I've always said we wanted an academy, whether it's private funding or government funding. I do it not because the government will fund it, because it's the right thing to do.
Why didn't you ever consider becoming a hawker?
Yeah, it's not, why did I not consider? No, I did consider, you know, once I'm old and I don't want to do anything anymore, I'll just sit there and sell a couple of dishes and I'm
good. Why haven't you done it already?
Many food dishes. I still have some energy left to do what I love doing. So one fine day, maybe as a retirement project, I'll come out and be the new hipster hawker.
What would you make?
65. No, I will go back to traditions. I think in 10 years' time, old food will be new again. Mm. You know, put it in a nicer plate. Char kway teow, chicken rice with fancier cuts of meat, better ingredients, and plate them nicely. But it's traditional food. Because by then,
you?
I think people would want a little bit more visual pleasure in the food, not just palate pleasures.
Why haven't you done it already? You could have done it 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Now,
I like doing what I do. TV, my TV shows, I do my food courts, I run the World Street Food Congress, I run food tours, I do food consultancies. I like a little bit of everything under the heritage street food umbrella. So maybe down the road, when I don't have so much energy to do more and I pass down, and I'll just stick to selling, maybe running one coffee shop, one food court, be there every day, chat with my friends, have all my favourite hawkers in there.
If you are cooking though, you're going to need a lot more energy.
Maybe I'll just cook for 2 hours and get the other guy to do it.
Okay, ultimately, what sort of mark would you like to leave on this scene, on this issue?
Read my epitaph when it's all over. I don't know yet.
No? You have you pictured what it would look like?
It will die fat or something. I don't know. Maybe it's about make people realise that the pleasure of eating is not just a function. It is about who we are. That the pleasure of eating can be so much heightened. Helps you enjoy this journey a whole lot more.